Testing. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Mr. R.
So your medicine.
I've had too much coffee. And then they gave me a Diet Coke about 20 months ago. I'm just...
Oh, me too. Just like...
All right. The Transportation Committee will come to order. I appreciate everybody's patience about coming and meeting at 6 o'clock at night, except for anybody that's in the front row and their initials are JB.
Hi, little dude. How's it going?
Okay. Well, that was meant for an embarrassment there, and it worked. I really appreciate everybody. You know, we're going to have a couple of night meetings. We got to get this wrapped up. That's just kind of the way the committees are rolling out. Senator Jungbauer, you're first up with Senate File 2544.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Senate File 2544, I do have an author's amendment. This is my first stop. The A1 amendment.
On the A1 amendment, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion does prevail.
All right. Members, I like to set the pace here for the rest of the testifiers. So before the official time clock starts, remember this is going to set the pace for how quick we're supposed to do these night meetings. Members, Senate File 2544 is just an authorization for alternative financing. Members, what this is the federal government allows a couple of financing programs that we do not have authorization to use currently in the state of Minnesota. All this does is opens those funding sources up to us and to MnDOT to procure and administer those programs in the state of Minnesota. I do have Brad Larson here if you have any questions.
Senator Jungbauer, the amendment we just put on took off the majority of lines 12, all of 13, and then 14. Can you explain why we want to take the tolling and design build provisions out of your bill?
Well, we're trying to make this bill totally non-controversial, and as you know, Mr. Chair, anything to do with tolling and design build, we've actually got other sections that we've dealt with them in statute and design build. We're in the process of a pilot program that deals with that that'll give us a lot more details on that design build. So I don't believe there's any controversy to this, but just allowing us the opportunity to use funds that are available at the federal level in Minnesota we don't currently have access to.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this bill for or against? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to see that we're going to access the TIFIA infrastructure bank. That's good. But I'm just curious, is this talking about public-private partnerships, the financing and operation of transportation facilities under PPPs? Because there's a lot to talk about there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, yes, indeed, it does talk about public-private partnerships. That is actually a key to using the TIFIA funds in some cases. TIFIA funds, we can have a short closing on them. There's some good amounts of money there. And, in fact, they are a key to some of the public-private partnerships in as much as they're a subordinated instrument, meaning you can use that and show that as money as a second mortgage type of situation, if you will. So you're able to put somebody else in first position if they're borrowing money on a project, which is a great benefit to putting together a public-private partnership type of a situation.
Well, Mr. Chair, the National Conference of State Legislature is about to turn in a fairly significant report, for the benefit of state policymakers, focused at legislators and legislative staff, about all the myriad of issues that we need to consider when entering into public-private partnerships. Not the least of which is, what the level of financing is, what the levels of accountability are back to the public. Back to the elected officials who are responsible for the delivery of public goods and services. I guess this is just really, really wide open language that allows the commissioner himself to enter into PPPs under his own initiative with all of the parameters set forth that he has. And believe me, the chickens will come home to roost right here in the legislature, and you only need to look as far as Indiana, where a ton of legislators lost their jobs after they delegated some of their transportation services to to the private sector, and Chicago is another one. Texas Department of Transportation didn't even receive its renewal. They have all of their commission, all of their agencies are sunsetted and have to be renewed, and they screwed up their public-private partnership so badly. And I'm not against public-private partnerships. I think they can be very good. I just think we really need to have a really robust policy in place before we enter into them, that the legislature was so annoyed with their own Department of Transportation, they failed to renew the Department of Transportation, had to come into special session to kind of extend the Texas Department of Transportation. So I'm in agreement with Senator Jungbauer and kind of where he's going. I think we should take a look at these, but this is just really wide-open language. I'm pretty uncomfortable
with it. Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I don't believe that this section of statute would allow for such a wide-open thing, and you're talking about how it would fit into other dedicated revenues, and it would have to match these other things, but we'll see if we can get some clarification here.
Mr. Larson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brad Larson, MnDOT's Director of Traditional and Innovative Finance, testifying on behalf of Senate File 2544. To answer your question about how this impacts public-private partnerships, there are many, many different types of public-private partnerships. The types of public-private partnerships you hear a lot about out there these days are like the Chicago Skyway or the Indiana Toll Road examples, or other big major project examples around the country that involve very long-term design, build, finance, operate, maintain types of approaches to deliver projects. And this provision right here is not giving us any new blanket authority to do those types of things. We are still, this law here, as far as we understand it, does not supersede the current toll facilities public-private partnership statute that is on the books under Minnesota statutes 160.84 through 0.98, and which was in this bill originally. It would allow us to enter into some smaller, different types of public-private partnership financing type agreement projects, similar to what Michigan has done with a couple recent projects, where they actually have had a contractor advance or finance the funding for a couple of smaller projects in their state, and then the DOT actually pays back the contractor small amounts in year 1, 2, and 3, and then a larger lump sum amount in like year 4, in the year that the DOT had originally had the project program. And we've actually taken a look at some similar approaches here, whether or not we could actually find some interest out there among governmental or a nonprofit entity or a private entity that would be willing to do that same or similar type thing, where they'd advance us the money for a project, finance a project today in agreement for us to actually pay them back the amount that we have programmed for that project in a future year. It's just a different way of trying to accelerate transportation improvements. Hopefully that answered some of your questions.
Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, I think actually those comments caused more concern than I had before that you spoke. So I would like to address some of what you said. But going back first to what Senator Dibble said, you know, I was able to take advantage of the public-private partnership in my district with regard to the Bren Road project, and worked very creatively. You know, Brad, I think you helped with that, getting the city, United Health Group, and the state to come together around building this interchange in a way that would keep 10,000 jobs in my district. They were definitely going to leave if we couldn't get that done. So one question I would have is, you were able to do that, and we didn't have this law. How does this statute affect that instance? And then I do have follow-on the other things you mentioned.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that was another different type of a public-private partnership, something that we call a private contribution public-private partnership, or P3, where we already do have existing authority in law to accept contributions of money or right-of-way from private entities for projects. And so, once again, many different types of public-private partnerships. This law addresses a private financing type of public-private partnership. This is where an entity is not contributing the money, giving us the money for a project. We're, they're actually advancing us the money, and we have to repay them that money based upon certain repayment terms.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Larson, I remember when MnDOT tried to use something similar for the completion of 62 and asked the contractors if they would carry the paper on that, and they seemed to be able to ask for that without this legislation. I think the contracting community came back and didn't have much interest in doing that because they didn't want to be on the hook for, you know, those dollars and paying their contract, the subs, before they got the money. So I'm still hearing that explanation. I'm wondering where it's good financial management for us to do it that way, for the contracting community. How do we access the federal funds? In that scenario, if we were to pass this, would we have access to federal funds because we were using that model?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, this would not give us any access to additional federal funds. The way that we tried to do a similar approach with Crosstown didn't work because of the fact that we were trying to force the contractors to do something that they'd had little notice that we were going to ask them to do at a very short time in trying to procure that project, and we were asking them to basically float us the cash for the project, yet still deliver it on a certain time frame. This would allow us to certainly approach a contractor and see if they are interested in advancing the funding for a project and us repaying them back at some future date. But unless they're interested, we're not going to do it. And so that's the biggest difference here. It does. There were some questions at the time across town whether or not we had clear authority to do what we were asking the contractor to do on the Crosstown project. This would give us clear authority if a contractor or other entity, governmental or nonprofit entity, were interested to advance us the funding for a project, do it today, we pay them later, we could do it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, and Brad can comment on this, but the way it was explained to me, and I've had several different contractors and developers come to me in my district along some of the highways, and some of the projects, for example, and this one didn't particularly fit because there was no funds, but there's a development along Highway 65 where the developer, MnDOT, has identified that this intersection needs to be a controlled intersection with lights. There's no money to put the lights in. The city doesn't have the money to put the lights in. If the contractor could get, if it was in the program already and they had planned it for, say, 4 or 5 years out, then this developer would front the money so that he could get the development done today with that payback over a period of time. So that was a scenario that we were looking at this type of a thing for.
Thank you.
It was already in the program. It wasn't subverting somebody else's type of deal. And because it wasn't already programmed, there is no money available under this scenario for that particular case. But we've got a number of different areas that are vacant land that are looking for this kind of an option if they can get something that's already programmed, say, in the next 5 years or so, that they could advance the city, the developers, and others could advance it knowing they'd get a payback at some point in time.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear. I'm not against this. I think it's great that MnDOT is thinking creatively and thinking about other financing opportunities, you know, to get stuff moving. You know, this of course would make projects more expensive. It's about taking out loans. We don't know what rate or what the market. You know, so it's going to diminish the overall program. The funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund. It raises questions about. Those contractors are in a position, or even in your case, Senator Bonoff, wealthy interests, are they in a position to bump stuff up the queue, leaving other stuff, to languish even longer? It just raises some of those oversight questions that that I think we need to deal with, rather than just simply creating such simple language that gives the commissioner clear authority to kind of do their thing. At a minimum, Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in either creating a pilot or some mechanism to report back to the to you as the chair and the ranking minority member about when the commissioner chooses to enter into these sorts of arrangements.
Mr. Chair, members, that was exactly what I was going to recommend, that we could put a as these once a year that the commissioner would report to the members, the ranking members in the committees affected, and tell us where these were used and how they were used, so that we might be able to be certain that we're comfortable with those kind of situations. So we could move on to another bill if we can get some language.
Well, Senator Jungbauer, this is not going to take Ms. Berezovsky very long to put this together, because the same thing we do with design build.
Right.
Every year there has to be a little report generated.
Exactly.
And Mr. Larson, your report should consist electronically filed, one page. Senator
so
Bonham.
Good points.
Thank
all.
You,
thanks.
Mr. Chair. Just one more question, Senator Jungbauer. Do you know how this might affect the state's debt limits and our bond rating in terms of if we take on another project that and have an obligation, will that be factored into our overall debt ceiling?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, I think it's pretty specific the way we have it here. Where it talks about the subject to the availability of state money or other dedicated revenues and resources with the approval of the Commissioner of Management and Budget. So it has to be an already existing available fund. And the way I understood it, that we tried to verbalize it in a term that it was something that was programmed, but in the future where we could advance it. So we were anticipating that it wasn't going to rob somebody else of their project. It was already in the queue, so to speak.
Thank you.
Senator Jungbauer, I'm having Ms. Berezovsky draft up this amendment just for Subdivision 8, or Section 1. Section 2, the TIFIA money and maybe somebody else from the department can clarify this, but I think that has to be reported on yearly anyway, any of these excess monies. So we're just gonna make this for Section 1, Senator Jungbauer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Ms. Berezovsky is just wearing the paper out over here, just scribbling away. So, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, being that Senator Jungbauer was showing us the way to move through a bill, do we have to have this time out in the middle of all of them now?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I was certainly trying to set the pace, but they were good comments all, and when we do go into something new, we do need that discussion, so I do appreciate it. Mm-hmm. You can only have so much fun trying to race through things, but I'm glad we have people to slow it down and say, mm-hmm. We want to know how this is going to work.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Mr. Larson, I think you and the department know that the legislature doesn't have a lot of taste for toll roads, your traditional type toll roads. We also don't have a real overwhelming desire to do the Indiana model. So I know that the commissioner knows all that and is well aware, but there are so many different ways that we can finance road projects today that weren't available 15 years ago. And, we just need to take advantage of them. And, I'm glad that the department has, put you in charge of that and, moving forward. I think it's going to, bear a lot of fruit. And, granted, we might not get the $100 million jobs done, but if we get 20 of the $50 million or $5 million jobs done that way, that's really going to help our bank account out, get jobs done earlier. And okay, I think I burned up enough time. So, Senator Carlson.
I guess, Mr. Chair and Senator Jungbauer, I guess I have the same kind of concern that Senator Dibble expressed, that it is wide open. And one of the things that when I heard the presentation of public-private partnerships that the NCSL put together, there was an entirely different perspective than what we've been talking about here as to a contribution to a particular project. And that was one thing that I talked with the fellow that gave the presentation, and he was a little bit surprised at what we called public-private partnerships and what he called public-private partnerships. His were more private in the design build stage and then turned over to the public, whereas ours are more public and private working together for a public good. And I guess I have a concern that there's still some definitions that aren't exactly used the same between users of the term. And I would like to know more about that. And also, I have that concern, too, that if we don't want to see someone with money be able to bump themselves up and use a portion of, let's say, contribute a portion of the money and then move ahead of another project that doesn't have a contributor.
Mm-hmm.
So buying your position in line.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, Senator Carlson, that MnDOT is well aware that when they publish their list of projects, and if one moves ahead of the other, they have a heck of a time in that community that got their project bumped back. So I don't think they have a lot of taste for bumping people around, especially if, you know, there's somebody with deep pockets that's willing to finance a project.
Mr. Chair,
you know, the MnDOT officials, I can't speak for your district, but my district, anytime somebody has, if there's a road project going on, any questions, they're out there. We have public meetings. They come. Sometimes they take heat. Sometimes they pass off information, and it cools everybody down. But, you know, MnDOT's not going to they're definitely not going to go out of their way to placate somebody with real deep pockets, knowing of the public outcry that would occur.
Mr. Chair, Senator
Come on
Carlson.
Down the Cannon Falls. I can show you a classic example. So,
as we move through this, and I'd be happy to look through the statutes with others because there are other areas that deal with some of these other public-private partnerships and the way we look at them. But if we can find anything from NCSL or anybody else as we move this bill to the floor, I'm happy to make sure we've satisfied the language of everyone that we're moving the right stuff forward and we're not leaving an opening for the wrong kind of stuff. So I think everyone here that's worked with me before knows me well enough to know that we're not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes here either. So
yeah. And Mr. Larson, you see that this has generated a lot of interest around the table. So when you write that report, you can give me the one pager. But if you send it in December, I'm probably not going to read it. But make sure Senator Carlson gets a full-blown report.
Yes.
200-300 pages?
Yes, will do.
Okay, thank you. With that, I think I'm going to have Ms. Spierzowski, if you're ready to go. Ms. Spierzowski.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jungbauer, members, the amendment would read, okay, at the beginning of 1.8, insert A in parentheses. Then after 1.14, insert B. Beginning August 1, 2011, and every subsequent year on August 1, the commissioner shall submit to the chairs and ranking minority members of the House of Representatives and Senate committees having jurisdiction over transportation policy and finance and the legislative reference library and to the legislative reference library an electronic listing of all agreements executed under this subdivision. The listing must identify each agreement, the contracting entities, contract amount, duration, and any repayment requirements.
No, oh, she's good.
Good.
Well, I kind of copied the design build one.
On the Bonhoff motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion does prevail. Senator Jungbauer, you want to move your bill? I don't know of any other reference that it needs, so you can send it straight to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would move that Senate File 2544, as amended, be recommended to pass and move straight to the Senate floor.
Further discussion on the Jungbauer motion. Is there anybody here in opposition to the bill that would want to testify? Seeing none on the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. Thank
you.
And then we have Senator Kielash. And Senator Kielash, Senate File 2004.
Mr. Chair, I do have an A1 amendment before we start.
Okay. As the A1 amendment's being passed out, Senator Kielash, it does exactly what?
It just changes the liability and clarifies some of the, in case a municipality is egregious in their snow plowing and does damage that they should. I'd like to let Ann Finn here from the League of Minnesota Cities to explain the bill and the amendment for you.
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. And what this bill addresses is a problem that has become more prevalent as a result of our foreclosure crisis and some other problems in the housing market. The bill essentially would allow a city to plow the roads in an uncompleted subdivision. What we're talking about here are developments that have been started and in some cases been abandoned by the developer, or there just haven't been the purchases of the properties in the development that were anticipated. There may be a few homes that are occupied in a development, and those folks need to be plowed out, and our emergency vehicles and other services need to be able to get in there. Absent an agreement with the developer, those folks don't have the ability to have the city just come in and do that. And so what we're asking here is for a three-year window of time in which cities can do this. And as Senator Kielash mentioned, there is a provision in the amendment that would sort of tighten up the liability language that you see in the bill so that the city would not be liable for damages on the property unless there was an absence of reasonable care.
All right, thank you. On the A1 motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Finn or Senator Kielash, doesn't the individual property owner currently have the ability to contract with the city or township to have their snow removal done? Why do we need this?
Senator Skoy, some of these subdivisions are in foreclosure. The roads are still considered part of the development until the primarily the project is primarily completed, and then they turn over to the city. So the city, by going into the private road, assumes some liability. What this does is protects them from any liability. In some cases, say top coat of the pavement is not completed, or there's just gravel road there. Any damage to that road, the city would be liable for, or could be liable for, without this kind of language. So
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, so because it's a development subdivision, the property owners don't own the road?
The developer owns the road until it's turned over to the city. And
okay, thank you.
Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, I'm should it be more specific? I'm just thinking in my own hometown, we have a development area that has no homes on it. And should this be more specific? Because this would lead me to believe that we would have the authority, or they'd have the authority to plow that area, even if there was no need to have it plowed. Am I reading this right?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, there's some language that you'll see in the bill on lines 1.13 and 1.15. And it states that snow removal activities are limited to streets reasonably necessary for access by buses or other vehicles. So the intent here is to make sure that we're really only plowing in order to get to the properties that need the access.
Mr. Chairman, it still leads me to believe, why would we want that if there's nothing out there? I guess what I'm saying is, should there be something in here that says if there's a building, a home, or something?
Mr. Chair, Senator Perry, that's exactly it. This is for the need to service residents in these developments, not just for vacant roads. The whole purpose of this is to provide emergency services to people, not to roads or subdivision.
Yeah, and I and Senator Perry, you know, you and I come from less densely populated areas, but I know in Red Wing there's a development that's going on, and it's a shortcut from one subdivision to another to go through there. Okay. But there's no homes, so
I follow that.
Okay, Senator Carlson.
Senator Kielash, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kielash and Ms. Finn, are you looking at it says line number 1.21, the road authority may impose a reasonable and proportional charge on all properties. Are you looking at putting a lien on all the properties or the ones that are occupied?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, it's my understanding from the attorneys at the league that drafted this is that it would be apportioned to all the properties in the development, even those that are unoccupied, so that when they sold, there would be a lien on that property.
Okay. And Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
I guess that's I guess I have a little problem with that, in that you're plowing the snow for the lots that have no one on for the benefit of the lots that have people on them.
And once again, we're talking about pennies on pennies. We're not talking about big bucks here, Senator Carlson.
Possibly, yes.
I'm thinking that we're talking about pennies. So,
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, that's correct. It would be a very minimal expense. And really what we're trying to get at is we'd prefer that the developer just took care of this until which time the road was turned over. But absent that, both the property owners, the residents in those developments, and the local unit of government is in kind of a pickle.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
I have to tell a little anecdote in that my family has been involved in developing, and when we were the developers, we plowed the snow, and I plowed the snow. And I know that it does take some effort to plow. People, I even coined a phrase, favors rendered become rights defined. Mm-hmm. And that means that once you plow snow, if you stop, people are really upset, even though you were giving them the snow plowing free before. So it can be a very sticky issue.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, this bill is for those developers that are not doing their job, not for developers like your family. Mm-hmm. So the idea is for those folks that have walked away from the development, been foreclosed on, that are no longer able to pay for it, or just are negligent in taking care of it. The city has the ability to go in, and the biggest purpose of this is to limit any damages if the snowplow goes through and breaks up the first layer of tar, for example, that the developer can't come back at the city when they didn't do the plowing and they were supposed to do in the first place.
I understand. Thank you.
All right. Senator Kielash moves that Senate File 2004 as amended be recommended pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, is there anybody that wants to testify in opposition to the bill? I see none. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Yes.
Senate File 2469, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 2469 is a bill that was brought to me by the Minnesota Truckers Association. And this is kind of actually, there were several issues that the truckers and a couple other carriers had.
Okay, cool.
And this is going to address one of them. First, I've got a couple amendments. I want to get the bill in the way that it needs to be for us to present it. And then I'm going to let Mr. Houseladen take over and describe some of the intimate provisions. But, Mr. Chairman, I have the A1 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves the A1 amendment. We're passing it out now. Senator Murphy moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then we have the A2 amendment. And this addresses an issue on lines 19, or 17 through 19, I believe, 18 and 19, Bill. It specifically talks about for compensation or higher, technical in nature. I'd move the amendment.
Senator Murphy moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think I'll let Mr. Houseladen kind of walk through the bill quickly, and then we'll take some more testimony.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Houseladen.
Okay.
Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Hi, good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Houseladen. I'm president of the Minnesota Trucking Association, and as such, I'm the chief staff person. I have with me tonight Mr. Keith Klein, who is our elected chairman, who's going to give the bulk of our testimony. But I would say we're going to be passing out a couple things to help you. One is some language of a contract that has a provision of the type of clause we're talking about here. And I will wrap up with an example of how this sort of plays out in real life. So I'm going to let Mr. Klein, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, take it from here.
Mr. Klein, welcome to the committee. Please state your name on the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Keith Klein. I'm the chairman of the board of directors for the Minnesota Trucking Association, a statewide organization representing 650 motor carriers and their allied vendors. I also am executive vice president and chief operating officer of Transport America, a trucking firm located in Eagan, Minnesota. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come before you today and discuss the importance of this piece of legislation, which addresses really three things: fairness, accountability, and safety. The MTA has brought forth this legislation in response to requests from our members, most of whom operate fleets of trucks of 50 trucks or less. They're reporting a growing pattern among large shippers adding one-way indemnification clauses to freight hauling agreements. Trucking firms feel that if they balk at these provisions, they will lose the business, especially given the pricing competitiveness in today's freight markets. Not only are these provisions unfair, but they also reduce the incentive for shippers to operate in a safe manner. As you know, motor carriers have to comply with state and federal regulations as they transport goods. We also have contracts with shippers that spell out additional legal duties and responsibilities. Many of the provisions of these agreements are important and beneficial. However, these one-way indemnification clauses require trucking companies to hold shippers harmless for the shipper's own negligence and intentional acts and omissions. These indemnification clauses effectively eliminate the incentive for shippers to meet their responsibilities and duties in a prudent and reasonable way. This creates a considerable risk to public safety and ships' liability from one party to the other. And one of the basic reasons for assigning liability is to persuade people to regulate their own behavior. For example, if a shipper fails to appropriately secure freight when they're loading a trailer of a trucking company and they seal that trailer and put that trailer out for the trucking company to pick up, if the the trucking company cannot do anything to change their own behavior to improve the securement of that load. It was really the shipper who ultimately loaded that and sealed that trailer. If the unsecure cargo ultimately causes an accident on our roads, or worse, the trucking company is required to indemnify the shipper for their own negligence. The shipper has no incentive to implement safe loading practices in this instance. I'd like to be clear about what the legislation actually does. It would make void any provision in a motor carrier contract that sought to indemnify a promisee, which is a shipper, for its own negligence and intentional acts or omissions leading to legal claims. It would also preserve the incentive for shippers to involve the motor carrier or in the motor carrier contracts to perform their obligations and duties safely. On the other hand, this bill would not establish any new legal duties or responsibilities for either party. It would not make void any contractual provision where a trucking company indemnified a shipper for the trucking company's negligence or intentional acts or omissions. And finally, it would not otherwise interfere with the freedom of contract except to assign responsibility where it belongs and improve safety. We are not charting new territory here, but learning from the lessons of others. 17 other states have adopted this or very similar language, and Iowa just sent the same language to its governor's desk last week. What's more, the Minnesota legislature has already established a precedent for making certain indemnification clauses void and unenforceable. A Minnesota statute, section 337.02, does just that for building and construction contracts. Again, we believe this is good policy for the transportation industry. You should have in front of you examples of an actual shipper contract clause with this type of language that I described. In conclusion, the MTA believes that this is a sound public policy that enhances fairness, accountability, and safety. If it's acceptable to the chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Hausladen to share with you one example of how this has played out in real life. Then we would be happy to stand for questions. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Hausladen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one example, and it's funny how these sorts of clauses can play out in a whole variety of ways. I had a member contact me this afternoon, and he describes an incident that took place some time ago. They were loading at a facility. Welding was being done on a tank owned by the facility by an employee of the facility. So the truck was just kind of there. They weren't welding on the truck. It was a separate tank owned by the facility. An explosion occurs, and the tractor trailer was destroyed in this process. But the negligent party, which was the facility owner and their employee, because of the contract they had, were totally at arm's length. There, nothing could be done to them, and that motor carrier had to take the whole cost. This is a carrier that was self-insured, so they had a $50,000 out-of-pocket hit for their truck that got destroyed by somebody else's negligence, and then their insurance covered the balance of it. So we could go on other iterations. Mr. Klein has other examples. But again, if you boil it all down, we want to just make clear who has responsibility. We're not trying to get out of any of our liability. We don't want to accept more than ours. But fundamentally, it's about safety and making sure that people know they have skin in the game and that they should act safer, and we think the roads would be better. Thank you.
Mr. Hausladen, on that particular example, did it turn out that the facility was holding the or that the owner of the load was also holding the trucker responsible?
I don't, Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly. That wasn't in the information they provided.
Yeah. Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that there's anybody here to testify in opposition to the bill. I know that there's been a few concerns, but as I think the testifiers have laid out, that this type of practice is being nixed in a lot of other states, and it would be unfair to keep Minnesota at a disadvantage, keeping our trucking, or I should say our shipping industry, under this type of contractual obligation. Just doesn't make any sense. It's not good business practice for them. So, and as Mr. Hausladen just said, if the responsible party would act a little more responsible once in a while, maybe they wouldn't need to be suing somebody that wasn't responsible.
Any comments from the committee? Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I believe this bill's got to go to Commerce, so I would move that Senate File 2469, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce.
Senator Murphy moves 2469 be re-referred, be adopted approved and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce. Any questions on the motion? Seeing none, All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Thank you, Senator Murphy. Senator Murphy has Senate File 2653, Type 3 Motor Vehicle Driver Requirement Modifications. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, this one ought to be interesting. We've got a couple of amendments here, Mr. Chairman. The first one is the A1 amendment. Mr. Chairman, I would move the A1 amendment. It's the A1 amendment is strictly technical. I'll explain A2 when we get there. Actually, I shouldn't say it's technical, Mr. Chairman. I should say it's to put it in the form that we need to have it presented, because it's a little more than technical. It changes pre-employment to random, and that's kind of key here.
Senator Murphy moves the A1 amendment. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, the A2 amendment is simply an amendment that will help the Division of Vehicle Services keep the cost of this at zero. And it's a rulemaking exception, and it's my understanding from the Division of Vehicle Services that if this is in the bill, it keeps it at a even cost. Zero.
Everyone has their copy of the amendment. Any questions on the amendment, on the A2 amendment? Senator Murphy moves the A2 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and as the committee knows, you know, we've dealt with the Type 3 vehicles for quite a while now, and I think we've made several gyrations. Mr. Chairman, I think you have carried some Type 3 legislation. Senator Olsen has, a couple other members of the committee. This is an attempt to try to bring it back together and get it done right, so that, and I'm not saying anything bad about the work that's been done before. It's just that there's so many different levels of this Type 3 school bus issue, and all the issues with booster seats, seat belts. I mean, you can just keep piling it up, and it's just confusing. And so this is just an attempt to try to, try to bring it into some semblance of order, I suppose.
Senator Stephen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, does this do anything that would lessen the burden on school districts to verify their the renewal of these licenses? Or is it still where – does this change anything what the school districts need to do in terms of checking the – or verifying that the operators are licensed every year? Because I heard from a couple of school districts that I represent that they feel like the Type 3 licensure issue is a mandate on them that is costing them money, and I'm not real familiar. I don't remember exactly what we're requiring school districts to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Give an overview of that.
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple provisions in here, and Senator Stephen, if you look down on 2.30, there are some requirements there that the driver's license has to be verified annually. You know, that's always been going on. for regular school buses. Now we strike school bus and put type 3 as required. You know, and everybody knows the situation we're trying to get at here. You got the wrestling team from Stillwater going over to wrestle the team in Hutchinson, and you don't want to take a full-blown school bus because you only got half a wrestling team. So you got 10 guys. You throw them on a Type 3 school bus, and now we need a driver. So, okay, the wrestling coach. And so the wrestling coach gets to verify to the superintendent or the principal every year that he's got a driver's license, and that's kind of what we're trying to get at here. The other thing is, and I'll let Mr. Kelleher speak to this, go ahead. I was going to talk for him, but he can do that.
Please state your name for the record.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm the lobbyist for the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. I think as a caveat or fair warning to the committee, I'm also married to former Senator Schwab, Grace Kelleher, who lobbies for the School Boards Association. And Brad Lindell is in the room from the Minnesota Association of Pupil Transit. We've all worked on this language, and it's my understanding, Senator Sieben, that the School Boards Association is fine with this language. And if not, I'll hear from it.
Hey, thank you.
The fast version, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelleher.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you remind me how often we have our regular bus drivers get their physical exams?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boniff, today I am not the most competent person to answer that question. This is I'm representing the School Bus Operators Association for the first time. But
welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be at the committee. But Mr. Lindell's here, and the State Patrol's here. I think the answer to the question is better for them.
Go ahead. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And
Lieutenant Edward Carroll, Minnesota State Patrol. Chairman, Senator, annually is when it's done.
Mr. Chair and Lieutenant, that was what I thought it was. So I don't understand why that we're willing to, Senator Murphy, why we want to be willing to waive the requirement of a Type 3 vehicle driver from the physical qualifications if they've had a physical within the last 24 months, because our regular school bus drivers have to have a physical every year. And my concern is that a lot of times who's really driving these Type 3, we use these Type 3 vehicles for the special ed population. And that's very high stress driving around the special ed, special needs kids. And so I'm even more concerned about their physical, you know, stamina and well-being than anything. And so I wouldn't personally see why we would want to have any less requirements for a Type 3 bus versus a regular bus.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Boniff, if you look there in Section 2, the rules are the same. Doesn't matter what you're driving. You know, it starts there in 326. And it goes down, talks about the physical qualifications, school bus driver, and test required to obtain a school bus endorsement. And then we add the physical qualification of Type 3 vehicle drivers. And, you know, if you read Clause B, they all have to do the same thing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, but if you look on lines 4.13, 4.14, it says the commissioner may exempt a Type 3 vehicle driver from the physical qualifications required to operate a Type 3 vehicle upon receiving evidence of the driver having been medically examined and certified within the preceding 24 months as physically qualified to operate a commercial motor vehicle.
Same thing.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, that's my concern, that if we're having our regular bus drivers be, and I could be missing something, but this is how I read it, that if our regular bus drivers are having to do this every year and we're willing to make an exemption if we've heard about their physical condition within 24 months.
Okay.
Mr. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Senator Boniff, I think what we're trying to do is on page 3, it talks about a school bus endorsement and having in the preceding 24 months physically qualified to operate a commercial motor vehicle. That's current law for school buses. We're sort of copying that law on page 4 down at the bottom where it says 4.13, also certified within the preceding 24 months as physically qualified to operate a commercial motor vehicle. So what we're trying to say is if they've already qualified for that examination, that you've already, you're good enough to go for a Type 3 vehicle as you are under current law for a school bus.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonner.
I would ask Ms. Berezovsky if you could read that carefully and let me know whether or not that we are also inadvertently having a Type 3 bus driver not have to get their annual exam.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Berezovsky.
I believe the intent of this language is to impose the same requirements on a Type 3 driver as on a school bus driver. And the cross-reference to paragraph B, and also the on line 2.22, 2.23, the cross-reference is another cross-reference actually to the same section.
Thank you.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
I think where the confusion is, Chairman, Senator, when I said annually, I meant the driver's license check. That's done annually. The actual thing is to make sure the driver's license is valid. The medical is every 24 months.
Oh. Mr. Chair, then I have no other questions about it. Thank you.
It always helps getting the professionals up to tell us what it actually means. So, Mr. Chairman, if there's
Senator Murphy.
This was worked on by the School Board Association, school bus drivers, State Patrol, a lot of different people. I think there's been a lot of eyes on this. I feel pretty comfortable with it. I know that it needs to, this doesn't need to go to another committee. This needs to go to the Senate floor. Is that right, Ms. Berezovsky? And Ms. Ball is shaking her head up and down. So, okay. I would move that Senate File 2653 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Senator Murphy moves Senate File 2653 as amended be referred to the floor.
With the recommendation to pass.
Recommendation to pass. Pass as amended. Any questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Then it's just clear. Everybody.
It's passed.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Senator Murphy, Senate File 2658, Motor Vehicle Carriers Transporting Milk.
Mr. Chairman, can we do 2707 before that?
Certainly can.
I want to do the hardest one last.
Okay.
Thanks.
Senate File 2707, Senator Murphy.
2707 is just a real simple bill to understand. Mr. Klatt is here from the Service Stations Association, or the Service Station
Association.
Association, yes. But this is just an authority to impound motor vehicles, and kind of what's going on is we don't have there's not enough authority for police and peace officers currently to move vehicles out of the way at crash scenes or if there's a fire at somebody's house and there's a vehicle jammed in the garage, pull it out. It's just it's tough to get some of these vehicles moved around. So what this bill attempts to do is it attempts to give, the local unit of government, the peace officer, may impound any vehicle for the following circumstances on page 2 there. And as you can see, if a person's arrested and taken into custody, most of the time those things happen on the side of the road. The vehicle is obviously in a place where it's unsafe. Let's get it out of there. The driver in the vehicle was issued a citation for a motor vehicle. Somebody without a driver's license, somebody that's in violation of 169A, or somebody that is careless or reckless on the road. And if those people are going to be placed into custody, their vehicle set on the side of the road, sometimes for days on end, and creates an unsafe situation. Everybody wants these vehicles off the road. I'll let Mr. Klatt give his best pitch.
Mr. Klatt, welcome to the committee. Please state your name on the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Lance Klatt, Executive Director of the Minnesota Service Station Association, as well as Executive Director of the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. The problem that we have in our industry today is that we come before you today in support of, obviously, Senate File 2707 regarding the right to impound vehicles. The bill chief authored by Senator Murphy, we feel it is necessary to pass Senate File 2707 as a result of confusion arising from a Supreme Court decision in 2008 entitled State versus Goster. Because of this decision, our towing members have seen significant confusion about when vehicles may be towed. Before this legislative session, we sent letters to organizations to gauge support for our bill, clarifying Goster. We sent this information to the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the Emergency and Ambulance Drivers Insurance Federation, and to representatives from the Sheriff's Association and the Chiefs of Police. We had no negative feedback and made a suggested change from one of the aforementioned groups. We know of no opposition to this bill at this time. This bill clarifies that a unit of government or a peace officer may, and again, it is still in the discretion of the person in charge at the scene to take into custody or impound an unauthorized vehicle. If the person driving the vehicle is arrested or taken into custody, the driver of the vehicle is issued a citation for operating the vehicle either as well. Without a valid driver's license, in violation of 169A, driving while impaired, or as stated previously by Senator Murphy, carelessly or recklessly in violation of Section 169.13. Thank you for the time to testify this evening. And I do have two of my members willing to as well take questions as myself if there are some questions here this evening.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Cook. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I didn't Fishback. Know. I'm sorry. What did you call me?
I thought you.
Oh, well, she's much younger, so thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy. No, he called me Senator Koch, since she's younger than me, so I was flattered. Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, could you explain to me? I'm a little confused because it's whether or not you were arrested or taken into custody for a driving offense, so for pretty much anything. I mean, under the way that I read this language, if an officer shows up at your house and the car is parked, it sounds like they could take the car if you were arrested or taken into custody for something else. Or is it only because it says whether or not for a driving offense? So I'm a little maybe someone can clear it up for me.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Fishback, there are those times when law enforcement pulls people over. And they're, they pull them over for, whatever reason. It doesn't matter. They swerved and went over the fog line. Okay, so they're going to pull you over and check you out. And they smell marijuana. And they find a 5-pound bag in the trunk. It's not an actual moving violation because, they weren't, smoking and impaired. But they've got an illegal product in the trunk of their car. And in that case, I say law enforcement have at it, impound that vehicle. They're breaking the law, period. But, the people aren't going to – the law enforcement's not going to start showing up at your house wanting to arrest you for something and then take your car, too. That's not what this is all about.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I don't – I'm not entirely sure that they would – what I'm just saying is the language clear enough that – that won't happen, I guess, so that it's to make sure that it's tight enough that that's not a possibility. I mean, I guess I just want to, if we're going to put it into law, to make sure it's clear. And I don't, off the top of my head, I don't have a suggestion, but it does, I think it's kind of broad.
Maybe Ms. Bierzowski has
an idea on that one. Senator Youngbaugh.
Senator Youngbaugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Murphy, on line 2.8, after taken into custody, I think we should put something in there, while operating a motor vehicle, and then comma again, whether or not for a driving offense. So we don't want to impound that vehicle unless they were taken into custody while they were operating the vehicle out on the public highway. So we could clarify that one. But as well, Senator Murphy, I think we need some clarification on line 2.13 and I'm dealing with section 169.13 for reckless or careless driving. I think we need to clarify that one as well, and I don't really see it in the statute, so I haven't thought through this one yet, but I mean, I've had, hate to say it, careless and reckless driving tickets when I was younger, and it wasn't an offense by which the police officers decided that I should have had my vehicle impounded. It wasn't in that kind of a operation, and I don't want to see people get their vehicles impounded when they're doing something wrong. I think the ticket and, you know, court appearance or other things are more than enough without impounding somebody's vehicle for that. So I think unless we can clarify line 2.13, I would love to eliminate line 2.13. So I guess actually I'll move that we amend line 2.18 by adding that after taken into custody while operating a motor vehicle, comma again, whether or not for a driving offense, and then striking line 2.13. I guess I would move for that amendment.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to object too much, but Ms. Bierzowski, does that work in that the Jungbauer language on 2.8?
Mr. Chair, I don't think it works. Sorry, I don't think it works because more than likely the driver would be pulled over and then arrested and taken into custody. So the driver would not be operating the motor vehicle. And while that might seem technical, that's the way the courts read that language, would read that language very technically. And I don't think that the impoundment would stand with that language.
And Mr. Chairman, and Senator Jungbauer, you know, right there at the beginning, they say the driver of the vehicle. And so, you know, if you're sitting behind the wheel and the car's not moving, I don't think you're classified as a driver. You're classified as an occupant. But if the key's on, car's in drive, then I think that's the action of driving. So I think that's kind of covered there.
Senator
Murphy, as far as 2.13 goes, Mr. Chairman, you know, this whole section is a may. They may. It doesn't say they have to, you know. And I do believe that the vast majority of our law enforcement officers use real good discretion.
Senator Murphy, Senator Skoy has a comment on that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Ms. Bierzowski can help me. As I'm reading this on line 2.8, I think that the key language here is that the driver of the vehicle is taken into custody. And are there some criteria that exist for when a driver would be taken into custody? And what are they? How severe of a crime, or what are the what are the conditions when a driver would be taken into custody? I mean, if they're DUI, yes. Driving without a license, yes or no. Careless and reckless, yes or no.
Bierzowski.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess this goes a little bit beyond what I'm real confident in giving you the general rule, but maybe some of the other attorneys on the committee could answer the question better than I could. But not for driving without a license. Yes, for I think that it's an offense for which imprisonment is a possibility, which is a misdemeanor. So, I would have to double check on that. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, the way I'm reading this is that the driver has to be taken into custody prior to there being any impoundment occurring. So it has to be a crime of, I guess, just a misdemeanor, of what I just heard you say.
Yeah.
Well, Senator Skoy, it is an or because even on item two was issued a citation.
But they have to be taken into custody first, or just be part of it, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, the under clause one and clause two are distinct.
They're separate, distinct.
So clause one involves a custodial arrest, and clause two is a citation for one, two, or three.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman.
Well, Mr. Chair, under paragraph one here, you would have to have probable cause to arrest somebody or take them into custody, and we have all kinds of standards for that. But here it says whether or not for a driving offense. The law enforcement already has the authority they need if there's a probable cause stop to take somebody into custody and to seize the car. I mean, I think we're having all kinds of conversations about that in the judiciary currently about whether that's an authority that we want to maintain for law enforcement under those circumstances. But then that or is a really big or, because beyond that, there doesn't even need to be probable cause and someone can take your car. And it's not even law enforcement. The way I read this, it's also a unit of government. And I guess that's my question to you, Senator Murphy. Why would we want a unit of government authorized to go in and seize a vehicle or and impound it? Why wouldn't we want to just restrict that authority if we're going to give it to somebody just to a peace officer who's then had some responsibility for following probable cause training?
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, most of the time the contracts that are written, especially in smaller municipals, are written by the municipal authority to the operator. And a lot of times it's the municipal authority that contacts the operator and says, hey, we got a tow on 169.
We have several people waiting here. Senator Ortman, do you have any follow-up?
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, I guess what you're asking is, can they tow this vehicle under these circumstances? Mm-hmm. But I think you've now authorized them in this language, even if it's not for a driving offense, and I don't know why we would ever authorize a governmental unit to do that. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, that comes into those instances where, you know, law enforcement pulls somebody over and, you know, say they pulled them over because they had a taillight out or whatever. They run their license and find out that they're wanted in Beltrami County for some felony offense. So they arrest them on the spot, throw them in the back of the cruiser, and now we got a car sitting alongside the highway. And sometimes it's not sitting in a very good spot, and it needs to be moved. And, you know, we need to get it towed and get it out of there. And, you know, most of the time when tows occur, they take it to the impound lot if the individual's been arrested. I mean, that's what Hennepin County does. I know for a fact.
Well, but Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, under current law, it's law enforcement then that would, if they've arrested the driver, has responsibility for the vehicle. And what you're saying now is the law enforcement wants to leave it there and let the governmental unit come in and take responsibility for the vehicle. And I think I'm not really comfortable at all with separating that responsibility. If you're going to arrest somebody, take all of the evidence or the assets and then be responsible for it. I'm not sure we want to separate that out.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I understand where you're going here. Mr. Chairman, I would move on line point, 2.6.
I withdraw my amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Delete unit of government or A.
Senator Murphy, Senator Jungbauer had an amendment.
Sorry. So first, Mr. Chair, members, I will withdraw my amendment.
Okay.
Now so that we can deal with Senator Murphy. Senator Murphy's ideas to fix this.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I would move that on line 2.6 to delete the words unit of government or A. That way it would just read a peace officer may take into custody. That takes out the unit of government.
Mr. Chair.
Are these questions to the amendment? Okay. And Senator Jungbauer, Youngbauer, you didn't have any more questions?
I had some more questions, but we'll deal with one amendment at a time or one piece at a time.
And Senator Saltzman, Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, it relates to the amendment in that I'd like you to continue with some deletions. Can I keep going?
Let's work one at a time here.
This is directly to that, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Okay. Senator Dahl, directly to this amendment.
On that issue, on the front, on line 1.7, you've also changed it from a unit of government, from a unit of government and a peace officer to a unit of government or a peace officer, and it seems to me that we'd want to keep those connected instead of separate.
Mr. Chairman, then I would incorporate in my amendment to delete the inserted language on 1.7 and 1.8 and reinstate the stricken language. Does that make sense, Ms. Berezovsky?
Yes, Mr. Chair, yes.
That'd be part of my motion. Thanks, Senator Dahl.
So, Senator Murphy, let me be clear. You're taking out, because there, in the past there was units of government. We changed it to a unit of government or.
Did you get arrested?
So now we're taking out units of government and unit of government.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Leaving original.
The motion was to strike the underlined and reinstate the stricken language. So it would read, the old language would be back in place.
The old language.
Yes. Okay, I'll renew my motion.
Mr. Chair, can I speak in favor of the motion, I think? I just want to clarify. I think what you're saying is if there's a car that just happens to be left unidentified somewhere, it can be towed by the unit of government. But if the driver has been arrested, now you're under the provisions that you're adding under Section 5. Is that right?
Right, and that has to be these folks over here.
Got it.
Okay, all right. Great.
Arrested or taken into custody.
Right. All right. On that motion.
I'm
not sure.
Make sure that we have the amendment correct.
On that motion.
On that motion. Yeah. 1, 2, 3.
We need to make sure that motion.
Yes.
We have
all those.
Yep.
Number C. And A is returning to the original.
Yes, that's fine.
So on line 1.7, we're returning to the original language, 1.7, 1.8. And on line 2.6, we're removing a unit of government or.
That's all right. Hmm? We got it.
Any questions on the motion? Senator Murphy moves those words changed. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion's adopted. Senator Murphy. Okay, now we have Senator Sieben. Do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just a little bit concerned about the scope of this legislation, Senator Murphy, because it seems like under the current statute, if a local unit of government or a police officer needs to get a vehicle off the road for the situations you described, they can. Whether it says if it's constituting an accident or traffic hazard, or if it's been left there for more than 4 hours at a time, what I'm concerned about is a police officer could theoretically, I'm not saying they're going to do this, pull someone over because they had their taillight out, say, find out that the person doesn't have a valid driver's license, and then take their car. Whereas, it just seems a little heavy-handed, I guess is what I'm saying. Because you're impounding their car because you think they may be guilty of an offense, not because, you know, you're just charging them and essentially then impounding their car when at least under the current language they have a little bit of time to call their husband to say, go get my car, I've been arrested.
Yeah.
This is just more like, oh, I get pulled over and you're going to take my car as well as give me a citation for having a taillight out. Seems a little extreme.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, they're not getting their car taken away because they were missing a taillight. They're getting their car taken away because they were driving illegally. We don't want to make illegal behavior on our highways condoned. This is going to uncondone illegal behavior. If you're driving without a license, you get pulled over, we're going to take your car. Because you shouldn't ought to be doing that. This is the discussion we had earlier. you know, with the DWI changes that we want to make. This goes along with that. Illegal activity on the highway, we should not condone it under any circumstance. And if somebody loses their car, guess what? I bet that's only going to happen one time.
Mr. Chair, just in response to that, I was just digging through my purse because I got a notice from the Department of Vehicle Services that I need to renew my driver's license by my birthday, which is in a couple weeks. So if I would have forgotten to do that and been a few days late, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no fee for me. There's no fine that Vehicle Services or the deputy registrar would charge me for not renewing my license on time. But yet you're going to say, oh, you could take my car? I mean, it just seems a little... I understand your intent, but I think we could further narrow the language. Maybe you could work on narrowing the language. Otherwise, I'm just a little uncomfortable.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, let's do this. 2.10, 2.11, 2.12, 2.13, delete them. That's my motion. That takes care of that issue. I see what you're saying, Senator Seidman. Once again, my preference is to people that are driving illegally. You know, I can understand the case that you said, and that would be heavy-handed. But, you know, clearly 20% of the people are operating vehicles today illegally in one form or another. They don't have the proper driver's license. They don't have the proper insurance. They're doing something illegal. 20% of all the drivers out on the road. And, you know, that's just behavior that we can't condone. But I understand what you're saying there. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move to delete 2.10 and everything after.
Okay. Senator Murphy moves to delete 2.10 to 2.13. Any questions on the motion?
It's a little more that needs to come out.
And the or.
On 2.9. You need the or.
A little more that needs to come out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make sure that we don't have a discussion about reckless or careless either. It's a preemptive strike. Mm-hmm. I learned in the last 5 minutes that the committee has turned on me like a rabid dog.
One step too far.
Okay. Ms. Berezovsky has some additional comments she'd like to make.
Mr. Chair, on 2.7, delete everything after vehicle. Insert when on 2.8, delete one in parentheses. And on 2.9, delete everything after offense and insert a period and then delete 2.10 to 2.13.
Yeah. Good one.
All right, that's part of the amendment.
Is that clear for
us? Yes.
On the motion?
On the motion.
Okay, on the motion. You've heard the motion read. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion's adopted. Senator Ortman.
One more. Senator Murphy, I'm sorry to say. But I think we should remove the language whether or not for a driving offense. I understand why you're trying to add impound. Right? They're not just necessarily going to take it into custody, but they may just impound a vehicle. But you don't need the language whether or not for a driving offense. They either have the authority because they've arrested somebody or not, and it doesn't matter whether you've added in that language or not. And so I would ask you to delete that and to make a period after custody on line 2.8 and delete everything after that.
Mr. Chairman, I would move on line 2.8. I'm capitulating. Come on. I thought that's what you guys wanted. On line 2.8, I would delete the comma and everything after, and delete 2.9, insert a period after custody.
Does everyone understand the motion?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion's adopted.
Hey, Senator, come on. Good? There's nothing left, Senator Youngbauer.
Senator Youngbauer.
Mr. Chair, members, and yes, I'm realizing there's nothing left. And as a co-author of the bill and understanding why the bill is necessary, we need to move it to wherever it needs to go. But I'm thinking we might need to come back and add something in there because, members, what you may or may not have seen this winter, I've noticed it especially, is because of that court case, there's been cars sitting alongside the freeways. And even in some cases on private property that because of the court case, vehicles haven't been removed, A local McDonald's that I go to, and I don't admit to eating junk food, but no, they didn't feel like they could have a car removed that was actually sitting in the middle of their parking lot for 3 weeks because the local law enforcement told them, based on that court case, they didn't think they had the authority to impound and have that car removed. So there are problems out there, and I understand where we're trying to go, and I'm just, as I was reading through this, we were all right on this stuff, that this probably wasn't the way to get to a lot of it, so I think we're going to need to still do some things before this bill has a final passage, because especially in the snow and ice we've had this winter, that's not a good thing to have these cars literally abandoned alongside the road and in the way of other people that are driving out there safe. So,
Mr. Lance has a classic example of what Senator Jungbauer is talking about. So,
a few weeks back, or Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, a few weeks back, there's an individual in Minnesota pulled over for a DUI and taken into custody, released, given underneath the supervision of a sober driver. I think this might be a record, I'm not sure, but as you probably can know what's coming next is that sober driver took the guy who got a DUI back to the car to pick it up, and the guy got nailed for a second DUI. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of people we... one out there, and I got two young children, and I'd really hate to have my car nailed because someone is able to drive their car still under supervision of alcohol. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, is there anything left of this bill that is getting toward the goal you sought, which is to be able to remove vehicles from situations where they are a hazard to other drivers?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, after we go through Murphy. The judiciary, maybe I'll bring it back and we'll see if we can't put something back in here.
I mean, you had a goal to help straighten stuff out. I just don't know if we've kind of taken out all the legal rights to do anything, it seems like, and I don't know if there's enough left there for you to accomplish what the bill was intended for.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Kielash, you know, the provisions in subdivision 2, you know, in the bottom half of the, you know, the last part of the bill, that was getting at more of the things that I was talking about, but you know, the very first part of the clause is probably more of the immediacy of the situations. These are people that are being taken in. You know, some of the other stuff may not rise to quite that level. You know, a lot of this came in because of this four-hour rule that we have, that you can't tow somebody's car if you see it sitting alongside the road for at least 4 hours. And you know, law enforcement's awful busy, so they'll drive by a vehicle. If they don't have time to stop and, you know, time and date stamp the car, you know, well, they got, you know, we're responding to a call. We're not going to do that. And so the car might end up sitting there for 2 or 3 days, actually, and getting into those issues that Senator Jungbauer was talking about. And, you know, so I, you know, that situation's still going to be out there, but that's that four-hour rule. And that would be more difficult to get through this committee than this bill was.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
But after I've been beaten into submission.
Yeah. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I appreciate my colleagues for handling all the other questions that I had, because I don't have any of those anymore. But I just had a comment to Mr. Klatt, that in this case, because, of course, we don't want some guy who's drunk back out on the streets. And so obviously, you know, that sober driver wasn't the appropriate person to be taking that guy. But now under this law, you could have gotten that car right away impounded. So I think we did make an improvement here today. And I think that we did move forward on your objective. And so I think the committee did good work.
It's better to get half the loaf than none of the loaf.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, wouldn't there be some way, if we're talking about issues of cars being left in hazardous places, wouldn't it be easier to write a law that would address that if there was some, I guess I'm just kind of wondering if, you know, because you've been talking about that, and in your opening comments you even talked about, you know, if it's in the way and they're trying to fight a fire. So would it be easier to go that way?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, we already have some tightly crafted emergency situations where law enforcement can move vehicles without regard or liability of damage. In that case where there's a fire, there's not a firefighter around that's not going to break the windows on your car and string a hose through it and hook it to the fire hydrant that you parked in front of. Or they're going to take their rig and they're going to push yours out of the way. And then they'll call a tow truck and have it taken out after they've destroyed the transmission. So either way, you get penalized.
Well, but Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, but you mentioned that in your opening statements about an emergency issue. So, I mean, yeah. And you were just saying, you know, that when it's a hazard, and I think it was Senator Jungbauer was mentioning the snow and things like that, that I would think that if there was a need to move cars for those reasons, it would probably – you say that there's laws that cover that. So
Senator
I guess I'm
Fischbach.
Just confused.
Senator Fischbach, I draw your attention to lines 1.14 and 1.16. That's where it talks about constituting a hazard
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, some people, when they look at located as to constitute an accident or traffic hazard, that means different things to different people. You know, and that's why I kind of like this May, because then the law officer can look at it and say, you know, this could be a problem. Let's get it out of here. But, in, you know, most of those are covered by that clause there. But once again, you know, you go to court, and there's a few pretty skilled attorneys sitting around here, and they could probably argue that vociferously. Is that the word?
Yeah, vociferously.
Right.
There you go.
That's one of those Jungbauer 50-cent words.
Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I would I would move that Senate File 2707, as amended multiple times, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Senator Murphy moves to SF 2707, which I think only has two lines now modified. I think the remaining two lines are 2.6 and 2.8, if I remember correctly here.
That's right.
Be recommended to pass and forwarded to re-referred to Judiciary. Any questions on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
26.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 2658, and hopefully this one comes out a little bit better here, because I got a little more skin in this one than the last one. No offense, Lance, but I got some milk haulers in my district. I think everybody has milk haulers in their district now. I think
don't
about
think
it, because everybody
do.
Drinks milk. And if you don't, you oughta. But you know, we've got a terrible problem inside the industry right now. I'm going to have some of the State Patrol come up and tell you what their experiences are. But I can tell you from talking with the milk haulers industry, with the State Patrol, with local road authorities, that we've got an issue out there. And the issue is not so much with newer milk hauling vehicles. It's some of the older fleet that we have, some of the three-axle vehicles. And I've got a delete all amendment that I think kind of gets towards this. But what we're trying to do here, members, is to get a permit process going for the next 3 years so that these milk haulers, and, you know, Senator Perry, you got them out in your district, and some milk haulers are a lot bigger than others. And they're able to go out and spend more money and buy, you know, big trucks, you know, the semi-trucks that you see hauling milk up and down the road. They probably just come from somebody's farm that has 300 or 400 milking animals there. And the thing is that the USDA says that you have to, once you show up on somebody's property and start taking the milk out of their tank, you got to take every last drop. Otherwise, the rest of that tank's no good. You have to unload the whole tank. And milk operations have gotten to be much bigger than they were in the past. You know, it used to be, when my grandpa had a farm, if you had, you know, 20 milking cows, you were a big operator. And today, if you have 200, you're kind of a smaller to medium-sized operator. And these milk tanks have gotten huge. So You know, you pull a semi-truck into somebody's yard, into their barn lot, you unload their tank, and it might fill up the whole semi-truck. So then off you got to go. Well, on some of the smaller dairies, they have dairy farms. Some of the tanks are a little bit smaller, so we still have some haulers out there that are using primarily three-axle vehicles, which, you know, you talk to your county engineers, they don't like it because a three-axle vehicle during spring weight restrictions shows up to the farm lot, they're already overweight, you know, because it's only a three-axle vehicle, and the State Patrol can explain all the axles and the weight distribution and all that and then the impact on the road. But the bottom line is that we want to give these people that have these three and sometimes four-axle vehicles a little bit of time to upgrade their fleet. In other words, they're going to have to put another axle on their vehicle, or they're going to have to get rid of that one and upgrade their vehicle so that it imparts less damage on a road. That's what we want, okay? How do we get there in 3 years? We're only going to authorize this permit for 3 years. I think the milk hauling industry, and Mr. Clavin's here, and I think that there's, I'm looking around, oh, I don't see anybody else from the milk industry. But, you know, from the milk industry's perspective, 3 years, and for these haulers, 3 years should be long enough so that they can get their financing in order and get their fleet upgraded. That's what this bill intends to do. It's kind of matching what we do today because a lot of these people that are driving three-axle vehicles are getting... Well, they're overweight. Like I said, they're overweight. Spring restrictions come. A lot of people get these... You know, the restrictions are on. There's posting that's done. There's hoops that people have to jump through. Bottom line is that milk tank has to be emptied out every day. Rain, sleet, sun, bridges are out. The milk still has to be emptied out of that tank every day. That milk hauler is going to figure out a way to get in there. We want them to get rid of these three-axle trucks, upgrade their fleet. We're going to give them 3 years to do it, and I'd like for the State Patrol to come up and give us their swing on how we're doing this.
Senator Murphy, I think we'll move your A1 amendment.
Okay, first. I've got the delete all amendment, A1 amendment. I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy moves the A1 amendment to 2658. Any questions on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. Senator Murphy.
As amended, aye. As amended, aye.
Get her done.
Mr. Chairman, members, Gene Halverson. I'm no longer with the State Patrol. I'm with MnDOT now. But what this bill does is mirror what's already on the books since 1986 for sugar beets, potatoes, and carrots. So it's allowing the same 10% weight increase for milk that's already allowed in statute for those other three commodities. What it does is it doesn't matter how many axles you have, it gives you a 10% increase on your axle weights, which gives these people some cushion on their having to empty the whole tank and haul all that milk. So the fee is the same. It's a permit that we've been administering in my section in MnDOT since 1986, and there's no problem. We haven't had any problems with that.
Yes. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Halverson?
Yes. Yes, Senator.
You just mentioned there's those other items that are now since 1986. This is a only 3-year time limit. Is there going to be a time limit on those other items, too? Or are we going to, 2 years from now, come back and say, well, we want to extend this out for another 5 years?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, what happened is a couple of years ago there was a permit allowed now for ag trucks that have six or more axles or seven or more axles. And so in speaking with Senator Murphy, this was a plan to move them, give them a cushion period to move them to those bigger vehicles.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Senator Murphy, do you have another testifier?
Kevin Urquhart is here to give the State Patrol's perspective if it's needed. Otherwise, I'll just move that Senate File 2658 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. It's got to go to finance. I'm sorry. Finance. That's right.
Is this the hard one? This was the hard one?
Yeah, it seems to have that bad.
You know, when you deal with truck weights, you always think that's going to be a hard one. But then, you know, there's this impound issue. And
Senator Murphy moves.
Impound issue and ended up in the dog pound.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I just, it's because it's about milk, Senator Murphy. And I, that's why. Yeah. For me, I mean, milk is my favorite drink. Nothing like a cold glass of milk after a meal. The more we can deliver, the better.
Your nighttime transportation.
It's beautiful.
I like that.
Any other questions? Senator Murphy moves Senate File 2658 as amended and be referred to Finance. Any questions on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted. This concludes the business for tonight.
Excellent. Yes.
Okay.
The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Gene. Thank you.